truth, I was on the CGA website and I had a minor panic attack. Christina Guillo is here today, who I love chatting with. She's the acting child advocate for the Connecticut Office of the Child Advocate. So, Christina, did you know there are two public hearings in front of the Committee on Children today? I did not. There are two totally separate hearings happening today. And at first, I'm looking through the rundown of the 9 o'clock hearing. I'm like, I don't see any of these bills we were going to talk about. It's at 1 o'clock. Just to be clear, there's multiple
a committee hearing at 9 and a public hearing at 1. A committee meeting at 9 and a public hearing at 1. Yes. And these are the public hearing, the bill you're concerned about. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that you're here today, first of all. Welcome. And thank you for always giving us the time. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So there's a couple of things at 1 o'clock today that I really wanted to dive into. Not to say that what's happening at 9 o'clock doesn't matter, because I did look through those bills as well. There's a lot in there. But specifically in the 1 o'clock hour, this public hearing, I think, first of all, your office is brought up, actually. So we'll get to that in a second. But it seems like there is a lot of focus on trying to better support DCF. In particular, Senate Bill number 6, an act concerning supports for children and families. It says it right then and there. And it kind of continues on with ways we could better support kids and protect them in our state. What are your thoughts on Senate Bill 6?
So Senate Bill 6 includes a few different provisions. And, you know, one of those, I think, is relevant to topics we've discussed before, which is with regard to children who are withdrawn from school, from the public school, and providing a process to notify DCF so that if there is an open case, DCF will be aware that that child has been withdrawn from school. And the bill does a couple of other things. There is a section There is a language that allows the Department of Correction to notify DCF when certain people are being released, people who have certain convictions, so that DCF can check to ensure that they're not going to home of a child who currently has an open case.
So I'm interested in this, Christina, because I was a little bit surprised in the Hartford Courant. There was an article talking about how homeschooling families are not happy with this proposal. They call it a gross overreach. They fear that if police show up to their doors, investigate them, potentially ban them having homeschooling as an option, letting personal information be tracked through a permanent registry or DCF files, they don't like any of that. But how I read it, and maybe I misread it, so feel free to correct me. How I read it was, we're going to task other entities to help DCF do their job more effectively. Basically, the schools are more involved. The Department of Education is more involved. The police are more involved. If you are somebody who has a clean record, I don't think this applies to you. Like, if you are somebody that has zero records, I've never gotten in trouble once. Might have had a speeding ticket in Vermont, but we won't go there. I have a clean record here in Connecticut. If I pull my kid from school and the school does this, hey, we're going to let the department know that Melissa's pulling Chase from school. The department goes to DCF. Hey, is there any record of Chase and his family? No, there's not. That's kind of the end of it, right? I mean, but if you have a Mimi Torres, for example, the little girl who was killed in 2024, her body found in 2025, that would have gone back to DCF and they would have been like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. Her mom was literally in prison when she was born. There's a record there, right? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, so there's so a couple of things. I mean, so let's talk about, there's sort of two different provisions, right? Mm-hmm. So one provision is really just a notification provision, right? If you do not have an open case, that provision is not really going to affect you at all, right?
That's my point.
Right. So, yeah, that's not going to affect you at all because you don't have an open case. And really all that does, so let me just back up a second. So currently, when children are enrolled in public school, SDE, the State Department of Education, receives information about that student, right? That's how we collect all of our state data. What's our absenteeism rate? What's your performance rates, right? What are your discipline rates? So the State Department of Education already receives information from public schools about all children who are enrolled. And when children are chronically absent, there are all kinds of rules that the schools have to follow before they can mark them as no longer attending, right? And when a child is withdrawn for whatever reason, that currently the State Department of Education gets notice of that, right? What this would do is add a layer where then the State Department of Education would notify DCF that that child's now been withdrawn, and then DCF would check to say, is there an open case here, right? If there's an open case, then, you know, DCF should handle that appropriately, right? I mean, they may already know the child's being withdrawn. If they don't know the child's being withdrawn, then that should raise some concern, and then they should do what they would normally do in their cases, which is check on the child. So if there's no open case, that provision is not going to have an impact.
That's what I kind of, right? And again, I don't want to dumb this down, because I do, let me be clear, I do think homeschooling families have been scapegoated in this. I think every time something goes wrong with DCF, it always falls back on, well, where could we fix homeschooling? I don't think that's right. I really don't. But when I read this bill, I'm like, this just sounds like we're fixing a loophole. That's what it kind of sounded like. And quite frankly, the vast majority of our homeschooling families are doing a stellar job, do not need to be scrutinized, should not be banned from doing what they're doing, and in fact are probably giving a better education to their kids than some public schools are giving to other kids. So I really don't want it to sound like I'm all for scrutinizing them. I'm really not. But this bill, to me, I felt like was just... This to me is closing a loophole when you do have kids who fall under DCF purview already. DCF should have more support from other entities, essentially. That I do agree with. I think DCF has issues with this and should have more support.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said, right? There are, when we've talked about this before, there are many, many, many families who homeschool their children, who do a wonderful job of it, whose children get an excellent education. Right. And, you know, certainly our office has no interest in stopping them from doing that. But this does address, you know, what you describe as a loophole. Right. So when we did our investigation in 2025, in that report, we included 5 case examples. In 2 of those case examples, the child was withdrawn, a child in the home was withdrawn for homeschooling while DCF had an open case. Right. And while they had, there had been a substantiation. And what happened in those cases is that the parents sort of partially cooperated. They got attorneys. They gave DCF enough information that DCF really couldn't continue to proceed. But while that was happening, they did not sign authorizations for the schools. And the children were withdrawn for homeschooling during that time. And DCF had no idea. And so that's a problem, right? And we do need to ensure that that there's some check to ensure that we can, you know, provide for the safety of children. And it's not, you know, this is not a prohibition on anything, right? This is just the child's withdrawn from school. DCF will get notice, and they will be able to, you know, determine if it's an open case, and then if it's an open case, you know, obviously, our expectation would be they would follow up, but it wouldn't have an impact if there's not an already open case.
Christina Gio is back with us, acting child advocate for the Connecticut Office of the Child Advocate. Really quick, Christina, I forgot to ask you this, a little off topic, but not really. Didn't the governor recommend you become the child advocate? Isn't during this session when that would be determined?
Yes. So I have been appointed by the governor, and there is a process for confirmation. So that's ongoing.
Okay. Will that be done soon? I forgot to ask you about this. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the confirmation hearing will happen soon. I don't know when, you know, the process requires a vote. So I don't know when that will happen. But
okay. Fair. I forgot to ask. And I'm like, you're still acting, though, right? I mean, at some point
I am.
Yeah. Not that takes away from the work that you are doing. Let me be very clear. But, I always like to know when interim and acting gets dropped. Just let me know, because I'm going to drop it. I'll drop it. And then I'll just call you the child advocate. So we're talking about a public hearing that's going to be happening today, actually, in Hartford in front of the Committee on Children. And in particular, we were discussing before Senate Bill number 6, which looks at DCF and, you know, better supports really for DCF. And I'm curious because I see there's a bill here specifically concerning your office, House Bill 5380. When I was reading through the language, and of course it's only a couple pages long, but when I was reading through it, it felt like it was giving your office, I would say, more access to documents or to items required. It almost seemed like to get more involved, if you will, almost at like a DCF level, but to get more involved in cases that impact children's well-being. I don't know if I'm reading that correctly, Christina, but I'd love to get your take on that.
You know, I looked at that bill yesterday, and I don't have it in front of me, but when I read it, it looked like it was just making some technical corrections. So I got to make sure I'm looking at the right bill here.
I'll read it off just a couple of things in here. It was saying, for example, provisions for general statutes concerning confidentiality of records and information for the child advocate, including the right to promptly inspect and copy any records necessary to carry out the responsibilities of the child advocate. And it kind of goes on to talk about that. So issuing subpoenas, for example, applying for and accepting grants, gifts, funds from other states, federal, interstate agencies, for the purpose of carrying out child advocate response. It just felt like it was more access, almost like a DCF, to be able to get involved with cases, which I don't think is a bad thing, but I wanted to get kind of your take.
Yeah. So that bill, so the language that you're talking about, our ability to issue subpoenas, our ability to obtain information, to compel witnesses to testify, all of that is existing law. We already have the right to do all of those things. That bill, all it does really is remove the word "his" in referring to the child advocate and replace it with the child advocate. It's really sort of a technical correction bill. I just pulled it up.
Oh.
Yes. All of that language we already have. So we have the ability to subpoena records. We have access to records that are otherwise confidential. We have the ability to subpoena witnesses and have them testify. All of that is already part of our statute. Yeah.
So then
it's a little confusing. It's just sort of a technical correction bill.
No. But that actually leads me to a conversation I did not plan for. So thank you for that, Christina. So when I'm reading through this, I would imagine a lot of the rights that you have as the child advocate, your office has, I would believe DCF has kind of similar opportunity, right? Like the things that you're
you
able
mean
to
when
do.
When they're investigating? No,
yeah.
No, they don't. So when the Department of Children and Families is involved and investigating a family, let's say, right? They get a report. First of all, they can't get involved unless they get a report, right? That's how their system works, because parents have a constitutional right to the care, custody, and control of their children. So they get involved if there's a report. And they, when they're doing an investigation, let's say it's an educational neglect allegation, right?
Yep.
They're going to want the school records. They're going to ask the parent for an authorization. If the parent refuses to provide an authorization, they do not have access to that information.
Interesting.
And the only way they can get it is then if they have grounds to go to court and file a petition, which is how those cases start, an allegation of abuse and neglect starts, and get a court order, they might then be able to get it because they have a court order. But absent that, they don't have the ability to get access to records unless the parent signs an authorization. Our office investigates all state-funded services. So when we investigate what DCF is doing, for example, we want to look at, okay, what did DCF do? And then we're going to then get all the records from all the systems that were involved. So we're going to get court records, we're going to get probation records, we're going to get school records, we're going to get health records, and we're going to look across the systems to see where the gaps are. So it's a different role, and because of that, we have a different kind of access.
Got it. Well, then that kind of leads me to then ask you, since you kind of have oversight of DCF in some regard, do you feel like we are doing enough to improve DCF? Because I mean, not to say that the loophole we talked about before wasn't important. It is.
Right.
But I think that it's pretty clear that DCF lacks consistent leadership, has systems that are all over the place. And I only know that from people I know who are DCF workers who have said, mm-hmm. you know, just last summer they changed all their systems over and it's very confusing. We also have an incredible shortage of workers in DCF. So are we... Do you feel like we are missing the mark, at least so far, with legislative proposals to improve that agency? I mean, I think that agency is the most scrutinized agency in Connecticut, at least in real time right now. And mm-hmm. I feel like we have this real opportunity to fix it, or at least to improve it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely think there's a lot more that needs to be done to improve the functioning of the department and ensure that the work that they're doing you know, it has the kinds of outcomes we want, right? And we're never going to prevent 100% of tragedies, right? There are terrible things that happen even when everybody does the right thing. That said, we have a lot of work to do right now with regard to DCF. You know, I think that, you know, there is a bill to, you know, in the Children's Committee today to create or sort of begin to create a framework for some external reporting. Our office actually thinks that external reporting is really critically important. So for 30 years, we had what was called the Juan F. Court Monitor's Office. There was a federal lawsuit in 1989 that because there were, you know, sort of broad failings by the department. And that lawsuit resulted in federal court oversight for 30 years. And what that did was create clear outcome measures that we expected from the department, right? And consistent reporting out to the public and to the legislators on how they were performing. That ended in March of 2022, right? And we had COVID. And so we're really in a bit of a crisis right now. We've lost a lot of foster parents. We don't have sufficient placements for children. The department is struggling to recruit and retain workers. There are a lot of challenges with what we look at as the foundational aspects of child welfare, like good child welfare casework, right? Are you visiting and consistent with your policies? Are you contacting collateral contacts, meaning the school, the doctors, whoever's involved with the family, consistent with policy? And is supervision happening consistent with policy? And so we really want to see a framework that includes reporting out on that and really some, you know, the department having some outcome measures of things that they are working towards that are really focused on what does good casework look like? As a measure of success.
And do you think that's something that goes beyond the legislative session? Like, is that something we could effectively start to fix now? Or is that kind of not in the purview of legislators? That's really more of just a focus on, you know, just the agency.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the agency has created tools over the last couple of years, some tools to look at these issues. And they're doing some things to try to improve performance. I think our office is concerned that that performance has not improved in sufficient ways at this time, but they have done some things. So there are things they can do on their own. But I think the legislature also has a role to play, right? Because that public accountability really can happen. There needs to be a structure for that, right? And I think that's where the legislature comes in, and sort of the one of the bills proposed today sort of starts that process and attempts to create an oversight committee. And so I think that may be a beginning of how the legislature can go about sort of pushing those issues and increasing that external reporting so that there is oversight and most importantly so that we can have open and honest conversations about where the gaps are and what we can do about them, right? If we have worker retention issues, we need to figure out what to do with that. We, the state, right? Department has a responsibility to figure out what to do with it. But, you know, this is about protecting children. So really, it's all of our responsibility to figure out what are we going to do about that?
Well,
what is it, you know, what does it require?
Yeah, well, and honestly, we see that with other, you know, we're seeing the state get involved with our police and firefighter shortages. We're seeing them get involved with our teacher shortages. We see them get involved with our healthcare shortages. And I just think it is interesting, 2 points that you made. One, that we don't really know how we have the failures we do at DCF. I mean, we know on the surface, you know, again, systems or leadership or lack of, you know, enough workers. But we don't really know how we have just consistently, decade after decade, come up short in DCF. So we have to understand that better. We have to really pull back the lens on that and understand it better. So that's important, certainly. But also the state does need to focus on, well, how do we, for example, recruit and retain people who want to actually be part of DCF and actually find a leader who wants to stay in that role long enough to see effective change? Like, those things do have to happen. And I think that involves the state a little bit. Christina Guillo, I want to thank you for always making the time to come on the show, acting child advocate for the Connecticut Office of the Child Advocate. And I'm sure we will be chatting again really soon in the future. Thank you so much.